It's Rise FM Mid-Mornings with myself and Mpumi Mbete. It's 10:15 and as promised, we bring you our Africa Day dialogue with Professor Vusi Gumede of the Faculty of Economics, Development and Business Science at the University of Mpumalanga. I also have Prof. Sechaba Mahlomaholo. He's a research professor of education, and Ms. Tulsile Buda. She's a lecturer of culture and heritage in the university. And I do have the professors on the line, and Ms. Tulsile Banda Buda. Tulsile Buda on the in studio rather with me. I just want to say hello to the professors. Good morning, Professor Gumede. Professor Gumede, are you with us? All right. How about Professor Mahlomaholo? Professor Sechaba, are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you, Mpumi Mbete.
I think I may have lost.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning. I think I may have lost Professor Gumede, but we're going to try and get him back on the line. We can start our conversation this morning. Tomorrow is Africa Day. And for me, when I look at how many years we've commemorated Africa Day, there are some conversations that we shouldn't be having today. If you look at the history of different liberations of different countries on the continent, I mean, some celebrate 60 years, some celebrate 30. You know, ours is young. It's fairly a young democracy, South Africa. But there are certain issues that as Africa today, we shouldn't really be having that conversation. Prof. Vusi, when it comes to development, when it comes to business, when it comes to issues of moving the continent forward, what would you say is our biggest obstacle as a continent? All right. Professor Gumede, are you still on the line? Okay. I'm going to take it into studio because we have Ms. Tulsile Buda with me. It would have been, I wanted to start with the ladies, right?
Okay.
But you're a lecturer of culture and heritage at the university. Are students finding interest in learning about indigenous culture?
I think when they come from high school,
yeah,
they're a bit puzzled and they are worried that what will a course or a module in culture and heritage take me. There is this mindset of African people ukuthi babuze bonyana mina isiko nobukhwari zizongisaphi, where will that take me? Because you know, from a high school level, teachers would emphasize or would encourage them to do maybe nursing, to do engineering, you know, and anyone who does anything related to culture and heritage or language is deemed as someone who doesn't really, you know, who's not going to make any impact in the society. So when they come and when we, of course, we assist them with choosing modules.
Yeah.
When we explain the modules, that they are usually skeptical, you know, to say, but you know, some think, okay, because I'm in a university level, let me just take it, you know. But when they start embarking on this journey with us, they realize the importance of culture and heritage. Because if you understand who you are, you get confidence and you become confident that you are going to make it in the outside world.
Speaking of which, I recently visited a school, Emakazeni, and it was a group of matricule learners. And I asked the question, so have you applied? What are you going to be studying next year? And you're right. Very few go towards studies like more, you know, indigenous studies. What would a course in culture and heritage entail?
A course in culture and heritage entails the importance of preservation of culture. So now we're looking at museums, we are looking at tourism attraction, we are looking at policy development in a later stage, we are looking at people who will be language specialists, because we need to understand that culture and heritage and linguistics are fraternal twins. These they both come from the same womb, even though they are seen as two different discipline. So here we are looking at people who would be working towards preservation of culture and heritage, and who will work towards making everyone see that our our indigenous knowledge or culture and heritage is relevant in a 21st century. Because if we look at developed countries like China, for example, and like South Korea, who use their indigenous language, who use their indigenous cultures, and who see them important, are successful countries. So we cannot deem our culture and heritage is primitive or old-fashioned. We say that our culture and heritage is relevant in the 21st century. And as African people, we cannot really understand where we are going if we do not preserve the knowledge our ancestors have fought through trial and error, have fought for so many years to preserve.
I couldn't agree with you more. Now, obviously, I'm a little biased because you've been with us on the show before wearing a different hat, that of an author, and we can go deep into the issue of language and the fact that we are conversing in a particular language that comes with its culture. I was saying to a colleague the other day, we know more about the British monarch than we do about issues going on in the Balubedu currently, issues going on with the Baroka chieftaincy, and even, you know, had it not been for the passing of King Goodwill Zwelithini and his wife shortly after, the conversation around even the Zulu monarchy. We are only having this conversation because, hey, Namhla Africa Day, hey, Nini Heritage Month. But the countries that you speak of, developed nations, it's an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. The Russian president, Nagahlala lapha etinkundleni, ukhuluma sgubo, ni translatelwe nini. I want to see if I still have, if we can bring back the professors on the line, because you touched on developed nations. Maybe this would be a good starting point with Prof. Vusi Gumede. Prof, are you back with us?
Yes, I hope I'm back.
Can you hear me? Yes. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, okay. So we were just touching on just the importance of culture, heritage, and us learning in these fields of studying these fields. But in terms of economics and development and the world of business science, we as a continent do not operate as an island. And as the world advances, as technology advances, how are we competing as a continent?
Well, let me start by saying something on culture, because it's extremely important. I mean, culture is really everything. You know, you can think of any part of the world. It is culture that really matters most. You know, and of course, language. This is above, you know, color of the skin. So I just thought I'd like to at what my colleague was saying around that. With regards to economic development, the challenge I think we face is the approach that we are following in Africa to pursue development. First of all, you know, a big question of what really is development and how could we ensure inclusive development. So if you think about what's been going on globally, I mean, all countries face challenges of development, and lastly, because of the approach to social and economic development, and I think this is really the key issue for the global human society, not only for us in the African continent or the global African family, that we need to confront this issue, that the approach we use, the model we follow to develop our societies is problematic. It has not developed us, and of course then it's difficult to compete properly. So looking within the continent, for instance, there were times when development was advancing effectively, if you think immediately the post-independent period, and we lost track. And the question is, you know, are there lessons we can draw from that, and how can we ensure that we can develop again, we can advance well-being in our societies in the continent? The key issue for me will be Pan-African unity, of course, that you can't do it as islands, you know, these isolated countries. Our countries anyway were never designed to succeed. Therefore, we need to go back to the drawing board to a drawing board that, you know, we need to come together as Africans or within the continent and advance development for the whole of the continent.
I'm going to come back to you, Professor Gumede, because I think when you touch on approach and inclusive development, immediately, even when you're saying, you know, we were not, it was not designed for us to succeed, it triggered a book I read years ago by Mweletsi Mbeki, The Architects of Poverty, and it touches exactly on that. You triggered other issues of, for one to travel to Ghana, it's more expensive than to travel to London. It would be cheaper to go via Dubai to get to Angola. And for me, those are some of the very confusing things. And that's where the question of then what does the African Organization of African Unity, the African Union, do to promote continental trade? Why? I mean, if you think of the history of the Rhodesian history and how the railway line was designed to travel from Cape to Cairo, why are we not, you know, focusing in on those as already established infrastructure that was designed perhaps not for our advancement, but use it to our advantage? But I want to bring in Prof. Sechaba Mahlomaholo on this conversation, because we cannot develop without education, but what kind of education are we basing our development on? Is culture incorporated into our curriculum in a way that reflects its authenticity? Because then the conversations around decolonization of education also comes in. How are we on that front, in terms of education on the continent? There was a time, I don't know if that's still the case, where Zimbabwe was considered, you know, one of the best quality education that you'll find in the country, in the continent rather. How are we competing in terms of education? And I want us maybe to focus even on foundation phase of education, because maybe university is late, right there. A Japanese grade R learner, grade 1 learner, atatanswe nje na mpu miga grade 1 la esalubinza.
Well, thank you very much, Mpumi. The problem with Africa, as Prof. Gumede and Pumzile Buddha have explained, originates or can be located in our history, that we are supposed to be a united people throughout the continent. We are about a billion or so people on the whole continent, like you'd have in India, like you'd have in China.
Mm.
But the unfortunate thing is that the 1.2 billion Africans that we are, we are divided into at least states. And as a result of the colonization of the 1870s and beyond, that still continues up to this day. So if we can find a way of coming together as put across in our Africa Agenda 2063, it's envisaged that we are going in the fund analysis come together as an integrated and united Africa. So you'll find that because you're still divided and you're still in this post-colonial era, even our education is still offered from outside the continent.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see snippets of excellence here and there where individual institutions, individual programs, are attempting to rediscover that which belongs to us as Africans. But on the whole, the majority of practices in Africa still pay homage to that which is European. But there is a discovery that if we locate that which we learn in our particular context, in our local experience, then we become excellent and even better in that which you learn. The discovery, I mean, currently in the debates, for example, they are beginning to make in South Africa that even the chips could be, you know, there could be an option that even chemistry, even those disciplines like that to be written in Sesotho, in isiZulu, to enable children coming from non-European context to also access knowledge and be able to share it with everybody else. So my understanding is that until such time that we can deepen the use of African languages and the use of African epistems in our education system, will always come second to the rest. So this is where we are. I can just cite to one example you referred to before, which is that in our faculty of education, we have even discovered that using African stories as a teaching methodology opens up epistemic access to children who otherwise would not have been able to, because the experiences as encapsulated in our current curriculum are foreign in many ways. And so children don't learn about themselves. School represents a foreign context different from their homes. So if we can bring that alignment between the school and the home, then we will be able to achieve that we see in all people. That would be my input for now.
Oh, Professor Chaba, I think you just led me right back to Ms. Tulsile, because when you speak about children and literature, I can't, you know, move away from your other hat as an author of a children's book that you intentionally translated into isiNdebele, which we finally read with my daughters, by the way. And they were fascinated to read about Mhluzi, Esihlakwana, areas that they drive past. How is the community supporting, you know, do they recognize the importance of an organized structure like you're a lecturer at the university, you teach on culture and heritage, but we need the support of the custodians of culture as it evolves, as we learn about it. How do we incorporate that? Because sometimes I feel maybe the institution becomes that gray wall and then umgwalo wabo gogo le uhlukene kanti.
Yeah, you know, we need to take ourselves back into the level of the community. The problem with researchers or with established or with formal institutions is that they understand that they need to work with the community. They understand that they need to work with knowledge holders in terms of preserving the knowledge. But rather, when they approach the indigenous communities, they
go as intellectuals, academics,
people that who know, people that you won't tell what to do. So now there is that fear from knowledge holders to say, maybe Tina, what we are saying is not the truth, or maybe we'll be judged. And hence why there is what we call indigenous research philosophies. So this is when people are encouraged, scholars are encouraged to say, use these guidelines so that when you approach communities, they feel safe with you. They feel like their knowledge is not marginalized or mocked. You establish relationships so that they can be able to give you this knowledge. You'll be able to document this knowledge, whether in education, whether in science and technology, or in any other field that you feel this knowledge fits. Because now we need to also be patient with our people. The fact that they encourage their children to do abo artisan and all is because of this continuous, you know, it's, I don't know whether to call it a myth or what to say. If you are doing anything in your language, then it doesn't really matter. So we do encourage our children to embark or to take these courses and to be such professionals and forget about who we are. So now that's why when we talk about decoloniality, when we talk about removal of Western methods, or we say that decolonizing the minds of Africans, we need to tell them or to show them the importance of their ways of knowing, doing, and being. So we need to show them what their ancestors have done that is seen as science and technology or seen as relevant, And now we develop those inventions and we make them the modern innovations. Because our, for example, if we look at the great Zimbabwe, if we look at Mapungubwe, you could see the trading system, you could see science, you could see currency, you can see economics, exactly. So if our ancestors were managed to maintain such, what can we do? What can we learn from that? And hence why we are saying indigenous knowledge is relevant in this modern society.
And it's ever more relevant now as a global community. If you think about, I'm going to get into the issue of the global pandemic that hit us and made us realize we are not as isolated as we would like to believe. And obviously this will then touch on economics. So back to you, Prof. Vusi. When it comes to developing and even trading as businesses in Africa, how do we then extend culture, our heritage, and the way of doing things, or the way things were done on the continent? Migration happened because of the same reasons. How do we then, link that to the advancements that have happened in the world, in a world where, once again, if I am trading, it has to be according to the US dollar on the African continent?
Well, let me touch on the question, the issue you were raising as you're moving on from my earlier input. Ayikwe Ama, the Ghanaian writer, says the beautiful ones are not yet born. He says this in the late 1960s, and I think it's still very relevant. So we have the challenges that relate to interference from factors or those outside the African continent, which impacts negatively on our own development. But also we can't exonerate ourselves and our leaders from the blame that we've not been able to do things that we should have done to advance development within the continent. So that's why I'm making this reference to Ayikwe Ama, because he captures it, very well about the beautiful ones are not yet born. But if you think about, the continent in a long time frame, think about where we come from, the colonization, imperialism, the capitalist economic system, all these that have been imposed on Africa or Africans and disrupted rudely our development. So we have to take this into account, that perhaps that's the reason, part of the reason why we've not been able to really advance development effectively within the continent. But there are some, good examples that we can learn from, and, many leading thinkers have, written about, areas of success and where we've fallen short, and, how we can deal with those challenges. When it comes to culture, my view is that you don't really have to be trying to adapt. So there is the so-called global village. But what we've seen happening is that others impose their ways of doing things on others. And Africans, you have to assimilate. I mean, even here within our own continent, it's very troubling that we have to assimilate to what, the ways of doing things, say, by the Chinese now. For a long time, it was, how Europeans in the continent do things. We have to assimilate, when in fact, they are the ones who should be assimilating. So we've seen our culture perhaps as inferior, but it's actually not. Tulisiri talks about indigenous knowledge systems. The world has developed at the back of that. And some of it presented as if, it originates from Greek. Books have been written about
cultural
this.
Cultural expropriation.
It originates from within our own, continent. So I do think as Africans, really the starting point, and I think Tulisiri makes this point, that, we need to remember how we lived, before we're interrupted, you know, by all these evils, you know, slave trade, slavery, you know, including, you know, enslavement by Arabs, you know. We normally, you know, talk about Europeans, but, you know, within here on our continent, mm-hmm. Arabs, you know, interrupted our own development. And they continue, by the way, interrupting development in the continent. These are difficult issues, of course, to talk about because they're sensitive politically. But I think if we're serious about development, we have to confront those kind of issues. And you know, our culture really is all that we have. You know, because you can be black and be Jew, you can be black and be Christian, you know, you can be all sorts of things.
Ah, I think we lost. Professor, are you still with us?
And talk about the language, we really have to make sure that, you know, our languages are not seen as inferior. Mm. There's a big debate about, you know, whether we need one language in the continent. Mm. You know, some of us argue that that's not really the issue. The issue is that we should use our indigenous languages freely. You know, we'll be able to communicate. I mean, here, I can talk to you, for instance, in isiZulu, and you'll be able to understand.
Yeah.
You may be speaking Swati.
Yes.
You know, if you go to West Africa, you speak Wolof, you know, about 4 or 5 different countries will be able to, I mean, people from the 4 or 5 different countries in will be able to understand. So, really, we need to have pride in our, you know, culture, including language. Professor Kwesi Prah says, you know, color is just a bonus. The key issue really is our culture.
But
let me stop here.
Lest we be, you know, accused of absorbing ourselves from part of the problem. When you mentioned the Ghanaian author, I'm immediately taken to Nigerian author of another controversial book, The Capitalist Nigger. Dr. Chika Onyene takes it to the individual, the mindset of us as individuals on the African continent and abroad, wherever we go. We don't seem to celebrate our own. We don't seem to invest in our own. And we can, you know, I must step on toes to say we can blame colonialism for so long.
Well, colonialism, you know, is still here, by the way. So some people, you know, talk as if it's no longer with us.
Is it a colonized mind, Prof?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a big problem with our minds. But you know... and it's not surprising because, you know, these are centuries, you know, of, say, Arabs or Europeans, you know, imposing their own ways of thinking, of languages, you know, ways of doing things. So we're not really ourselves, and we need to confront this issue that, you know, I talk about thought liberation, that we need to liberate our thoughts. We need to be critical, conscious. Citizens. I talk about thought leadership, which, you know, is something else I talk about when it comes to leadership in the continent. So although colonialism has gone on for up to a point, you could argue, the issue is that what we end up with, for instance, the state in Africa is really a neo-colonial state. It's an instrument that is not meant to advance development in Africa. And it's a point I keep making, you know, that the reason we're not able to advance even countries such as South Africa, where, you know, you think there's some development taking place and then, you know, you lose track, is that even the state was not designed to really advance development. So there's a bigger challenge about how we can reconfigure, you know, our societies, the global human society, and as Africans really come together and confront the difficult issues, including our, you know, the colonization of the mind. We shouldn't shy away from that because it's a historical experience. The reason we find ourselves this way, you know, looking at the standard, which is inappropriate, looking at, you know, the West, you know, we should be living the same way as they do, or the Chinese, is because, you know, our minds, you know, were colonized, and that has not yet left us.
Aluta continua, as they say. It's 10:45 on Rise FM Mid-Mornings. My name is Mpumi Mbete. We're having our Africa Day dialogue with the partners from the University of Mpumalanga. On my panel this morning, I have Professor Vusi Gumede, Faculty of Economics, Development and Business Sciences. I also have Prof. Sichaba Mahlomaholo. He's a Research Professor of Education. And Ms. Tulsile Buda, Culture and Heritage Lecture, and we're talking about the importance of Africa Day, but more than just a day, we should be having Africa Day all day, every day. You can join in on this conversation at RiseFM943 is our Twitter handle. Use the hashtag #ILoveMyAfrica, and you'll see we'll just retweet there as well. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have to touch on COVID, how it's impacted on us. And I'm going to start with Professor Mahlomaholo, because education continues to deal and battle with this pandemic. We continue, conversation continues this morning on Rise FM mid-mornings. It's our Africa Day dialogue with the University of Mpumalanga. And you can also follow them at UniMpumalanga and hashtag #ILoveMyAfrica. And we do. That is why we are celebrating. But we have to hold each other accountable. We have to hold ourselves accountable. And what better way to do that but by through conversation. And hopefully, you know, if we can iron out or at least understand the challenges that we face as a continent, we can move forward as a continent. But we can't do that without education. So we continue this conversation with Prof Sechaba. Are you with us?
I'm with you, ma'am.
Oh, yes. So, Prof. Sechaba Mahlomaholo is a research professor of education at the university. I'm taking back to 2020 in March when President Cyril Ramaphosa announced hard lockdown. We were not ready, in my opinion, as a country to deal with the impact of COVID. What I found was, you know, the more advanced schools were immediately able to kick into online learning. They had resources, they had access to the students, and those kids didn't miss a beat of schooling. They just had to adapt to a new way of learning. Then we take it to institutions of higher learning, and my understanding is we're having conversation about hybrid learning right now, of, you know, how we can function. So this pandemic hit us and forced us to innovate and adapt to the conditions, because it wasn't going to go away in 21 days. And even now with, you know, phase two of vaccine rollout, we're still going to be dealing with COVID-19, the pandemic and the effects of the pandemic. What was the impact in terms of education when you speak to colleagues on the continent?
Thank you, Mayor, for the wonderful question. You're right. The pandemic put us way back, you know, destroyed the gains and the progress that we're making as a continent and as African people within South Africa. We find that issues of inequality were deepened. Like you rightly say, schools that were privileged, that resources could continue teaching. But the hard lockdown that emphasized social distancing and other non-pharmaceutical approaches to containing the pandemic meant that education was to be conducted remotely. And many of our schools, many of our black schools or black universities, which are normally under-resourced, were not ready and prepared for that. There were problems like, access to electricity to start off with. I was struck by that fact, you know, that there are still villages, there are still places where electricity has not reached.
So
let alone
Wi-Fi.
There's no Wi-Fi and connectivity. These are huge problems that even though we're trying, or the government and the institutions are trying very hard, but those are critical factors that make the playing field not to be level. So the pandemic deepened inequality. It brought that into sharp focus. It made us, everybody aware actually, that schools and institutions that were not well resourced were lagging behind. Out of the 12 months of a lockdown in whatever form, different levels that it assumed, schools that did not have connectivity, children there suffered greatly. And there's even research that shows that number of the amount of content that they learned was almost halved in instances where they could platoon maybe and come up with improvised strategies to make up for that. But on the whole, we lost very greatly. There was need for printing. Even students or learners who were supposed to be learning at home, they had to to do learning remotely, do printing, submit the assignments. If they don't have those resources at home, that was another problem. We know the levels of poverty, of unemployment that we're suffering from, and that was exacerbated by the pandemic. So a huge irreparable damage was done, and this will require a lot of effort for us to make up for the lost time, for the lost opportunities to improve and make up for anyway the inequalities that existed before.
So
that would be my input. Yes, ma'am.
Prof. Sechaba, now from what Prof. Gumede is saying, you know, it would require effort. We all know it. That effort means financial support. We saw business, you know, come together, forming command task groups and really pulling in all our resources. But as a continent, when it came to backing this up, and I think, you know, the person on the street might be confused when they hear we pledged towards vaccine development and like, as Livegati, Le Africa, was it a lack of resources that we faced as a challenge, or was it more a lack of how to pull our resources together efficiently?
From where I sit currently, I think it's a combination of both. And I think Professor Gumede highlighted the point very clearly that a lot of money was taken in the past out of the continent, and it still continues to be taken out of the continent. There's a lot of money required, really, to make up for the different years. Over and above that, there are these other issues where things may not be properly run, properly coordinated, but that complements, that adds, exacerbates the problem that we already have. And to turn the history around, that requires a massive effort on our part to try and replan afresh. And in an article that Professor Gumel has published, he proposes, you know, a new economic approach to doing things where we start the story with ourselves, looking at what is it that we need and rearranging the economy so that it's not meeting just international monetary institutions, but it addresses our concerns locally. So my view is that until such time that we have that realization that for us to be able to make a difference, we need to put Africa first, and every other resource that we have, we try to pull in order to enable our schools and our institutions to be as competitive as any that you can find in the world. So those are the conditions, I think, that we have to meet, that we try to manage our resources better, but at the same time, we stop the hemorrhaging that continues to happen in terms of, you know, our money leaving the continent and the shores of Africa. Thank you.
Thank you so much. In case you're just joining us this morning, we are in conversation with the University of Mpumalanga. We are celebrating Africa Day, focusing on, you know, some of the challenges. I've got Professor Vusi Gumede with me. I've also got Professor Sechaba Mahlomaholo, and I've got Ms. Thusile Buda here. Thusile, before we go to the news, because we're going to wrap it up just after the news, but before we go to the news, all these conversations are happening, and in my mind, I'm thinking of a village. I attended a funeral during this COVID period. It was in December, Eswatini. And there's a way of doing things that was challenged by, obviously now, you know, protocol, COVID protocol for the safety. were we able to marry our ways of doing things with the restrictions, and what were some of the challenges coming out? Because, you know, in your lecturing and studying of culture and heritage, and again, you would refer a lot to Khosi, Baholi, Betemasiko, Netimfo Temsabunje. Most of the time, you could see, kuba nalenye conflict of indlela kwentiwa ngayo. There was a time kuthi wakufuna ku rapwe Makasket nani. So, babage. Babagataya.
Hey, babagataya. You know, we presented this paper on COVID-19 and customary laws when we were talking, focusing mainly on closing of initiation and also the imingcwabo funerals, right? Ukuthi the way that we do things in our culture, you know, there are processes whereby they need to wash the body. You know, there are people who have to wash the body, who wash it overnight, who will sit in the mattress. You know, there are certain protocols in each and every culture. But now, the government literally said no to those protocols. Even the Batin Isidumbu cannot even
and slowly,
you know, you have limited time. Exactly, you have limited time to bury your loved one. Mm-hmm. Even the time and the period of mourning was not, or is even now, is still something that is still there. But even though the you know, things are a bit eased, so customary laws and our protocols have been disturbed by COVID-19. For the Ndebele people, this was an initiation school year, and they had to postpone it because of COVID-19, and they had to think of the lives of so many young people and their families and us as communities who would want to attend. So COVID-19 has really put a strain on our culture, but at the same time, it has raised so many questions regarding people who see our cultures as barbaric and primitive. For example, the use of traditional medicine. A lot of people resorted to using of traditional medicine as a treatment instead of going to clinics and hospitals. You know, there is this thing, so people have resorted in using, on going back to their indigenous knowledge in their own backyard. So this COVID has really... our culture, in terms of culture, there is some advantage. The traditional medicine that we've deemed as demonic and old-fashioned is currently helping us, and which means this is our point of departure. We move from here. We're taking it from here, and we can see our grandmothers or our forefathers' ways of healing are relevant, and we should use them. And hence why so many people will run back to their communities and ask Gogo, how do you cook this?
Ways.
How do you mix this? How do you do this? You know, so because they now want to learn from the people they've deemed demonic or old fashioned or barbaric.
So while it posed some challenges, it also exposed some, you know, highlighted the importance of indigenous knowledge. We continue this conversation just after 11, and I'm going to ask my panel to wrap it up with a celebratory note, because all these challenges and all these obstacles that we face and continue to face have not, you know, it hasn't all been doom and gloom. There have been some great strides that we made in preserving and promoting culture in our education system and in terms of development on the continent. So after 11, we're going to focus on where are we now and going forward and doing the one thing that Africans do best, and that is celebrating who we are. You on Rise FM Mid-Mornings.
Celebrating Africa Day with Rise FM and the University of Mpumalanga, an African university leading in creating opportunities for sustainable development through innovation. Join the conversation on Twitter under the hashtag #ILoveMyAfrica.
To valorize and to commend those initiatives where we see attempts being made to bring the stories of the Africans to the fore, and they have been used to teach across the curriculum, not only in the so-called, what do they call, native languages or vernaculars, but they should be used across the curriculum to teach every discipline. So African stories, African experiences need to be emphasized. There are already institutions, like Mpumzile said, that are moving in that direction where you're allowing children, irrespective of where they're coming from. This is where inclusivity comes in, that you don't exclude children because they speak a different language. You have to create opportunities to make them succeed by opening up the knowledge spaces. So So that should not be limited to one day, like you say, but we are in Africa here, and we have to recognize that in terms of what we teach and how we teach.
Thank you so much. That's Professor Setshaba Mahlomaholo wrapping it up for us from his side. And we also coming back to Professor Vusi Gumede to wrap it up. Because we are celebrating, Africa has been able to host international summits, international events, 2010 right here, still a key event, because the world said we couldn't do it, and yet it was such a successfully hosted event. I can mention and list them one by one, but I also look at the sustainable development goals, or the global goals as we know them, 17 interlinked global goals designed as a blueprint to achieve a better, more sustainable future for all. And yet I feel, you know, Africa as a continent is not at the same starting point. I think you made this reference earlier on, and none of this can be achieved without financial backing, economic policies that support this development, bringing us back to, as a continent going forward, we can reflect on the strides that we have made. What are some of the key points that you would say we have managed to achieve this? If we can depart from this point, we can achieve so much more.
Oh, Mpumi, that's a difficult.
It's loaded. I'm sorry.
You see, the challenge we're having is, you know, that hardship. Africans, wherever they are, globally, and particularly here in the continent, you know, is still very, is tough. You know, life is hard for Africans. So it's difficult to list things, you know, that we can celebrate. But I think the biggest achievement, really, when we think about where we come from, in, you know, thinking about many centuries, is that Africa defeated colonialism, you know. So defeating colonialism was really not easy. But of course, you know, we still have all these challenges. Neocolonialism is still with us, and we need to confront that. Be careful that, you know, we don't get recolonized as many see, and the scramble for Africa that's continuing. But I do think that, you know, having defeated colonialism is evidence that Africa shall rise. Africa shall rise again. And you know, look at how we've dealt with COVID-19. Of course, it has worsened our challenges and reversed gains, especially, you know, for the economies in Africa. Many economies were doing very well, about, you know, 6-7 of fastest growing economies in the world were in Africa before COVID-19. So it's taken us back, and unemployment has increased, poverty and so forth. But I do think that, you know, we've also managed, to deal with the impact that was initially anticipated. As you know, many people were saying that it's going to be a bloodbath, you know, a lot of us are just going to die. A lot of people have died, of course, but, you know, given to what was anticipated, I do think we've done quite well. And now, you know, they're trying to look for reasons why, you know, Africa is, you know, not as affected as they anticipated. So my thinking is that we coordinated the response better than many countries, many regions in the world. So there are many perhaps things that, you know, we can celebrate, although we still have many challenges. And we must make sure that we don't make the same mistakes we've made in the past. I think I'll stop there.
Thank you so much to my guests this morning for your input, your contributions in this conversation. And as Professor Gumede is mentioning there, it's a conversation that continues as the world evolves and Africa adapts, and we try to, you know, advance as well as a continent. It's conversations that will continue to live on beyond us here. So I just want to say thank you this morning. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you very much.
Oh, man. And of course, enjoy tomorrow being Africa Day. It's just about 20 past 11, and Africa Day commemorates the founding of the Organization of African Unity, which was on the 25th of May back in 1963. And the University of Mpumalanga was just in a beautiful conversation around the African continent, and they will be joining in on the global community to celebrate this year's day under the theme creating conducive conditions for Africa's development and intensifying the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. So if you missed this dialogue, well, I think we will have it on all our social media at Uni Mpumalanga, at Rise FM, and of course you can visit the University of Mpumalanga.ac.za for more information about their Africa Day lecture, which is going to be held tomorrow on the 25th. And you can also go on to risefm.co.za for a podcast of this conversation. Until then, continue the conversation on Twitter under the hashtag I Love My Africa. My name is Mbumi Mbete. This is Rise FM Mid Mornings.